tell us about the Copperhead trouble.
Well, you see, the most of the Democrats, why, I never could get anybody to explain it to me. It made no real sense. And they were opposed to the army. Let each state make its own state laws, whether they wanted to be slavery or a free state.
Okay.
There were, what was it, 9 states that was Confederate?
9 or 11, something like that.
Well, there were like 9 that. All, and a couple that was part. You see, Virginia, West Virginia,
split off,
was loyal.
Right. Split off.
Part of Virginia, part of Maryland, come under the Dixie line. See? I was showing why it was here 4 years ago. I was down there. You got a grandson like this fella here. No, wait. The regular grandson, Warren's boy. He lives in Baltimore, works in Baltimore. His family's there. They own a department there in Baltimore. Well, not Baltimore, real city, but there's a suburb of Baltimore up this way, north of Baltimore, that is just residential, practically. There's why a few little businesses, but there's probably 100,000 departments. 4 in a house, 2 in a house, 6 in a house, 8 in a house, all streets. And the streets are maple, ash, birch, pine, spruce, hemlock, and goes on and names them all. The avenues go by number. Number 2 Avenue, number 4, number 5, number 6. But the streets, it's Pine Street or Cedar Street, but every darn one of them is named after some wood like that. I was there in a state a month and a half. I went down with Joyce and her husband. I think it's 4 or 5 years ago. And you know, they've still got some of the old seaside feeling down there. Do you know that?
They're still bitter in a way.
Yes, sir. It still tastes bad. They don't really act it out nor shun you for it, but they're still rebels. A conquered people is never satisfied. You understand what I mean? But we had a neighbor. He was a Frenchman. Well, I guess he was born in the States, but he was of French descent. And he was Democrat. And he didn't want to go to the army. He was, well, he was a man, I should say, 30-odd, married. And this is what my father tells me. I didn't know it. It's before my time. But Louis, was a Democrat. But there was only 7 Democrats in that school district. There were 30 families in the school district. And when the draft came in 44, see, and they drafted everybody from 45 to 18, see.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you wanted to or didn't want to go, well, you went. Well, it passed a law that if I could hire him to take my place.
Right.
Can't do that today, but you could then. Well, Louis hires a nephew of his to give him, and give him was supposed to give his mother $100 to take his place. Well, a boy happened to be one of the unlucky ones. He died out there. He was sick or something, but he was buried out in the South. He died during the army while he was in service. Well, apparently the mother never got the $100. Of course, and that leaked out in all those guys. And my father said, that is his father, told him after he got back, that they'd rode poor old Louie on a rail around there one night and tarred and feathered him. So that's the way, and that's what they thought of the Democrats. And it was for years and years after the war, you know, that the Democrat Party didn't get anywhere. After a while, that died away. Now, people don't seem to think much about it. But do you know, that still rankles in my mind. When I hear some of my family, you're going to be a Democrat, I'd say, you don't know that my father carried a wound from Confederate lead for his lifetime. It hurt me, understand, to think that they wouldn't believe what I believe, that we were in the right, the other was in the wrong. Now, today, we don't look at that so much, because we ain't been hurt, any of us. Not to home. We go out there and help them fellas. We fit everybody's war and paid all the expenses. And I don't know what we've got out of it, only size. Isn't that right?
Quite a few dead.
Yes, quite a few dead. Well, I didn't happen to lose any of mine. His father was in the war. Second World War, Milford was in it, one of the boys. And today, I think there's somewhere about 20 of my grandchildren and their relation. I mean, great-granddaughters that married and their husband to be a...
Army man.
Army man.
Yeah.
You see, Alice's oldest girl, her husband's a lieutenant. He's in Indiana. You see, a big post there. Government post.
In every state, there's probably one.
Well, anyway, they were the last I knew of in Indiana. Well, Aunt Vivian's oldest daughter. They're both the same name, but no relative at all. They're both kings. Her oldest daughter married a king. Well, he's a navigator, a mechanic. He used to go from Ottawa. He was stationed in Ottawa when they got married. And he went with the planes as far west as they've got stations and supply them, see? From Ottawa, those listening stations. Well, Ray, that is he's Raymond King, that went along for 4 or 5 years, and then he got stationed at Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, Canada. Of course, that's in Canada, you understand. He got two daughters married out there. And he got himself grounded because they've got a family, they have children, and she's with him, and they have a home there, right in the barracks that they live in. But he's some mechanic. Now, I don't know what his grade is, I couldn't tell you, but he's got some bars on his coat. There we are, in the rascal. Well, he's a lieutenant. Well then, her youngest son, Grant McManus, and Vivian's youngest boy, this is his oldest sister I've been talking about, King's wife. Well, Grant, he's in Ottawa. He's a navigator, mechanical navigator. He's in the Air Force, but he's mechanical, electrician of some kind. And he's just on his second hitch. King Ray, I think this is his fourth hitch, 12 years. Their oldest daughter is about 11 years old. Well, now then, Alice's boy, your brother, and I don't know Johnny and Milton's boy or not. Milton's boy, he was supposed to go. I don't know if John's went or not. Then there's three in Canada. Vera, the youngest girl. One of her boys is a lieutenant. But he's bought himself off, she told me last year. They buy themselves off after they become an officer.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, in Canada, not here.
Oh.
They can buy off and buy back in if they want to. But they got to sell it. They got to have Shelley's commission, see, back to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Then Canada can give that commission to the next fella if they want to.
I see.
English laws are a little different than ours.
Well, where do you want to start with? Blacksmith?
Yeah.
Let's start with the blacksmith shop, okay?
Remember the blacksmith shop you worked on down on Mill Street? I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, a lot of memory.
How large was it?
Oh, I don't know as I could tell you. It was quite a large shop. Had two fires on the same chimney, right in the middle of the building. About two-thirds of the way in, rather. Oh, it was probably 30 by 40, I should say. It was a blacksmith shop and a wheelwright shop combined. There were two separate buildings, you understand. There was a wall between them. But he opened the door from the blacksmith shop right into the wheelwright shop. Henry Baker run the wheelwright shop. He was a wheelwright. That is, he made wagons.
Mm-hmm.
Done woodwork of all kinds.
Oh.
Well, that's the size of the shop.
Anyone live upstairs or?
No. Oh, yes. Storage, that's all.
Storage?
Yeah. It was just one story building. That was just the attic. We just put up stuff you didn't want to use.
What'd you have up there? Spare iron and wood?
Well, not too much iron, because it don't take much iron to make a ton, you know.
No.
Them buildings weren't built for that. No, mostly were broken down vehicles, one thing or another, pieces. Could be used some other time. Sometimes we'd go up there and pick up something we'd use over, you know. It's just scrap, as you might say.
Were you busy all day long when you worked?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I can recite you a little incident that happened there. I think it was the second year I was there. The apprentice had to do the sledge work on heavy iron.
Now, what's sledge work?
Well, he'd handle a 10-pound sledge, 10-pound hammer with two hands, and strike on the hot iron. He's going to make a heavy weld. Now, there was axles in the wagons them days that were 2 inches square, solid steel. Well, they would come in two pieces, and they had to be welded in the middle. Well, that was too heavy a piece of work for the blacksmith with an ordinary 2-pound hammer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, we had to learn how to strike, see? Well, the blacksmith would bring the hot iron on the anvil. He'd take his hammer and touch where he wanted the men with the sledge to hit. And he'd say was, follow me, follow me, follow my hammer, follow me, follow me, follow me. You had to learn to hit where he told you to hit, with where he touch it. Well, you got to learn that, see, and learn how to strike, not stand there and pound. You had to bring it over your shoulder and down on as fast as he struck. And doing a weld, you had to strike just as fast as man could. Well, I don't know as I can tell you what he was welding, because we welded lots of things. We'd pick up a mess of old horseshoes, straighten them all out, and weld them all together into a bar,
mm-hmm.
maybe an inch by half inch. We'd have a bar 6 feet, 8 feet, 4 feet, according to how much many of them we'd use. And we'd weld them all together. Well, then we'd take that and make new shoes out of them, you understand. Well, when he got ready to weld a mess of stuff like that, he called for one of the stellars, one of the apprentices, to come and strike. See? And this day, Ed Sawsville was striking. Well, Ed Sawsville was on his first year. I was on my second year. Ed was making a mess of it. Hadn't it all learnt yet. I felt sorry for Ed. He was a good boy. He hollers, he says, "My little Frenchman, you come over here and strike for me." Appears I had struck for him and pleased him. "Now, by God," he says, "another man to swear. Do as I tell you. Follow me. Wherever my hammer is, you hit." "Yes, sir." Well, we struck probably a dozen or 15 blows. And to my left, about 6 feet from where the anvil was a window. I says to myself, "Now, old man, if you're so smart, you watch out, because I'm going to strike pretty fast." I was thinking this. The second or third blow that was struck, I catched his hammer with my sledge, and I sent it right through the window. And it broke, well, it was 7x9 planes, I guess. Well, it broke the whole sash and everything else. Because when his hammer went through the window, my sledgehammer went with it. I followed his hammer, just as he told me. Well, sir, he sat back on the arch of the fire, where the fire was set, was a brick, big brick square. Maybe two fires was in that square, the break. By God, the first man I ever had done as I told him. He says, "You go up to Thompson's Orville," he says, "and buy a window and tell him to come down and put it in. Tell him to charge it to me." He says, "That's the first man's done what I told him, asked him to do." He never bothered me after that. We got along fine. I expected to get a call in them, but I didn't. Now, maybe that's worthwhile or not, I don't know.
That is.
Eh?
That is.
It wasn't very smart, you know. But
I think it was pretty smart.
I didn't feel proud of it afterward. But I didn't think fast enough. But I did think fast enough to catch the hammer. Made up my mind, "No, fellow, you're playing me pretty hard." He'd had been, you know, because he liked the way I struck, and he kept me pretty busy at it, and you know, that was hard work. You're seeing 10 pounds over your head for about a half an hour, steady, and you knew what you were doing, the sweat be running down your pants belt.
What were your most important tools when you used in the blacksmith?
Oh, Lord, yeah. Hammers was the biggest tool we used, because we pounded most everything.
Okay.
Hammers and a die plate for cutting threads and bolts and nuts was used a lot in the shop, because those days all large bolts, anything the end 3/8 were mostly made from wrought iron. We'd take rods of iron, 10, 12 foot long, cut off what we wanted, make the head, form the head. We had head tools, and take it over to the vise bench and put it in the vise and cut with a die plate, cut the threads. That was a tool we used a lot. And in the summertime, an upset. Instead of cutting the tires on the wagons, when you want to set the tires, tighten them up on the wheels when they were loose. We used to put the
Yeah. He's not too well on.
I had hell of a rail.
He did?
Oh, no, it didn't get ugly. No, no.
What was it about?
Huh?
What was it about?
Oh, I can't tell you what it was today. It was about the time Grandma was sick, he was coming over there. So after Father Charles died, he took over there to Constable, you know, Cosio did. And he came over there. Well, he provoked me. That was what was trouble. And I took him to task about it. And he didn't like what I said, and I didn't like what he said. And today, what he said then, they say today that's wrong.
What'd he say?
Well, he said that if a man wasn't a Catholic, he couldn't go to heaven. Do you believe that?
It's to my disadvantage to believe that because I'm not a Catholic.
No, but do you believe that?
No, I don't.
Well, I don't either. Because Christ said, believe in me and you shall be saved. He didn't say you had to be a Presbyterian, a Protestant, or a Catholic, did he?
No.
Believe in me.
There weren't those churches then.
When Christ said, there was no such thing as a Catholic church.
Nor a Presbyterian, nor a Protestant.
Just a minute now. I'll take you reading me a little further. I've read that damn book there from end to end a dozen times. What is Catholic?
It means universal.
It means Christian in the Hebrew word. If you're a Catholic, you're a Christian. They were Christians. He didn't say, he didn't mean they were Catholics, you understand? They believed in Christ.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
They were Christians. Well, if you were a Methodist or an Episcopalian or hell, whatever it is, if you believe in Christ and he crucified and you live a decent life. Oh, they say that the Lord is like our Father. He will not hurt his children. He'll not send you to hell forever. Could your father do that? Could you do that to your children?
No.
Well, if he's a father to us, he ain't going to burn us. Now, believe me. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's the way I believe it. Oh, I never went to any other church, nor never professed any other religion. But I quit doing their devilish stuff. A lot of it. Can't see it. Why? He says you've got to go to confession every so often. You couldn't go to confession of a man above, and you can't lie to him either. But I can lie to you if you're a priest. I ain't going to tell you the devil that I've cut up.
Priest is only a man, so is a minister, after all.
Yes. But remember this, the prayers of a righteous person accomplishes a lot.
Mm-hmm. That's right in the Bible.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know that.
Yep.
You've read it, so right. Then, if you live right, you ain't going to tell anybody. They'll know it, okay? Your neighbors will know whether you're living right. Your children will know whether you're living right. But if you don't live right. But remember, I can name him, I ain't going to, no, because I'm not certain. But according to what I know of humanity, there's a lot of them that go to church every Sunday that they'd better stay to home.
That's right.
Ain't that right?
Yeah. Church is a stained glass country clubs, I heard a minister say once, you know. Like a golf course, but you sit still.
it's a society. Each one of them is just a society. Mm-hmm. Where does a minister or a priest go to confession?
A priest goes to another priest.
And the ministers, of course, don't go. It's not in their religion.
Well, I'm only telling you one thing. If you had committed something that you didn't want anybody to know, you ain't going to tell the priest or the minister.
That's true.
But you can't say, Father, I didn't do that, can you, with the Father overhead? Because you know that he knows it. There's no use you trying to lie to him. You're lying to yourself. But you can't lie to yourself. But I can lie to you. You can lie to me.
That's right.
Well.
Is this the way your mother felt and your father? Or were they more narrow?
I don't know. My father was quite a free thinker. Mother was more religious than Dad was. That's the way I feel. And what provoked me with Cosigo? Now, old Father Charles used to come over there. There was a neighbor's wife, her mother, Miss Russo's mother, Miss Moore's. It was, didn't go to church because she couldn't. My woman couldn't. So old Father Charles, you know, I've never heard of him, but he was at Notre Dame. He used to come over, once a month, once 6 weeks, give communion. We'd have a nice visit. I always had coffee and something for the old man after he'd got done his work. We'd have a nice visit. He was an awful nice man. Well, he died. Cosio come over. There was a couple of girls to home. They looked after it. I was outdoors. I didn't see him at all the first time. The next time he come, I see him drive up and get out of his car, come up the stoop. I opened the door for him with my hand, and he walked right by me. Straight by. And walked right in the bedroom, there's no question. My wife didn't get up till, well, whenever she felt like it. Sometimes it'd be 9 o'clock, sometimes it'd be noon. And he come out. I said, "You want a cup of coffee? Toast?" "No." "Well," I says, "here's $5 to pay your expenses." He says, "I can't charge for this." "Up to you, I suppose." And he walked down the door and went away.
Not very civil.
Run along about 2 weeks. I guess about 2 weeks, maybe a month. I went down just exactly well, but he come again. I didn't offer to shake hands with him. I didn't speak to him. I opened the door and I said, "My wife's in the bedroom." I said, "Ellen." He came out, I opened the door, and he walked out. He said, "Ain't you talking today?" "Well, no," I said. "You told me the other time you came in here. I followed you into the car and asked you why. And you told me that you didn't shake hands with anybody when you was going to give people confession." "Oh," I said, "My hand would terminate yours, would it?" "Well, that's the rule." "Well," I says, "Father, maybe that's right, but I don't believe you." "Now," I says, "there's been several different priests here." And I says, "they all shook hands with me." I says, "I don't think I'm any worse today than I was then." "Well," he says, "I don't see a church." "No," and I says, "you didn't go to." "More." I says, "I don't believe in you at all. I don't know that I want anything to do with you at all. You can come here, I presume you'll have to, it's your business, but I says it don't matter to me whether you do or don't. That's why Cosigo and I didn't get along. Maybe I was wrong, maybe it's none of my damn business, I guess it was. I didn't think he acted like a man of God at all. Would you?"
"No, that's not."
Maybe it's right. Maybe if he was carrying the Eucharist, that he had no right to touch anything till he got disposed of that. But I didn't know that made any difference.
I read now where in the church service, in the Mass itself, there's going to be a part where everybody shakes hands or embraces everybody else. So
they already have that.
Things have gone right around, you know.
Yeah.
And I've seen Masses on television where the priest will embrace the other priest, so I think they're coming around to your point of view more and more.
They do that.
Oh, you're free thinkers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
They do.
No, boys, I told them this. I was brought up Catholic. And my wife tried to be a very good Catholic, and I guess she was. She brought the children all up, and they all went to catechism, and all went to receive communion, and first communion, then confirmation. And what was it, that priest in Bangor?
You mean,
His father was a Methodist.
Yeah.
What was his
father,
Weir?
No, the one
you
have back, the old priest.
Oh, I remember his name, but I can't just think of it.
Back 1920.
Cornish.
Father Cornish? Well, the girl died when she was 22, Ruth. She went to catechism to Father Cornish. And confirmation. And went to church that about ago. We belonged to that parish that for 15, 20 years. They shifted us over to Constable. And when she died, he came down, he heard of it. Well, he'd been there a couple of days before. He used to come every week to see her.
See Ruth?
Hmm?
See Ruth?
Yeah. He come down every week for the Cornish kid. And he heard she had died. Well, it was announced over the radio, I think, at that time. And he come down, him and his mother. His mother was Catholic, you know, she was O'Reilly. But her father won't. His father won't. They come down, him, mother, and him. He went in and said some prayers. Alfred had been down, Ruth was laid out. And he came in the kitchen and he wanted to know my woman, Grandma, for a pair of scissors. Of course, Ruth had long hair and they were platinum blonde, you know, it's good thing. And he says, what do you want scissors for, Father? She said, I want a lock of Ruth's hair. And his mother spoke up, she said, I want one too. So he, in his neck here, he got a lock of hair for himself and his mother. And he says to me, he says, where are you going to have the mass set, here or Constable? Of course, our lot, burial lot's in Constable. Why, I said, burial in Constable, and I thought it would be any more than right to have the mass set. Well, he says, that's true, but he says, I want to say her mass. Well, I says, I'll call up. I forget, I think it was old Father Charles was at it. Tell him, he says, I'll take care of that. But he says, I want to say her mass. He says, I want to say her mass. You're going to pay for it. He says, well, I says, I ain't going to cook you about that. Don't. You can do it if you will. Well, he says, I want a memo of her. Since there ever was a saint who died, and she's one. Well, I said, she's been a good girl, that's true. And he says, I didn't baptize her. He says, and that's all. The rest of it, says, I don't know. He says, I know. So he said the mass, and he said a beautiful mass. After the body was supposed to come in the hearse, he went upstairs in the organ balcony, opened the two windows there, and just as far as he was going towards my home, so we went out of hearing, he was playing hymns. He was a good musician. I like Father Cornish. He was a man's man.
Can we go back to the blacksmith shop? You've gotten
yes.
away from it.
Well, all right. Ask away. I don't know what you want.
We're talking about tools. I don't know how we got from tools.
Well, you had to have them and tongs and punches and chisels. That was about all. You had to have a dish of welding compound on your fire bench. So if you're done any welding, you had to use some compound of some kind. Most of old blacksmithing, you just clean sand. The sand they'd get out of a spring or somewhere where it was washed.
Mm-hmm.
Washed sand. That holds the heat into the fire. It don't have anything to do with welding the iron. But it keeps the heat down in the iron that you're going to weld. All that flux that they use in all welding, you know what it is. Well, that don't help the weld. What I mean to say, it don't help the iron to stick, no. But it keeps the heat even, and it coats over, it keeps the air from hitting the outside of your iron. When you bring your iron out on your anvil, that's cold. It's going to chill that there. Well, if that crust is there, that still stays hot, the same as where you hit it with a hammer. That crust is there. And it isn't, it'll weld better as though you hadn't used it. That's all any of that flux does. Now it don't make the iron stick anymore, or any better. See? But it holds the heat, and the hot iron is the only thing that makes it weld, because each one is ready to run. A liquid, you're liquefied between those two coatings. And when you crowd them together, they run together. And that's what welds, see?
Is the coating of the iron liquid? The flux is liquid?
It's liquid. No, it's a powder of a kind. It's like sand. It's granulated like. It's consisted of borax. Mostly, see, and steel shavings, or iron shavings, not steel shavings, iron shavings, borax, and, the other is poison.
Sodium?
Hmm?
Sodium?
No, I don't know that too well. Try to think of it. God knows I use my word and I don't know. But words I don't use and things, I forget. What number times I forget them.
Mm-hmm.
Wake up in the night and remember a name that I was looking for all day, and it'll come to me just like that. No, they... Well, they use it, it's just dross off of lead.
Lead would be a poison.
Hmm?
Powder of lead would be a poison.
Yeah. It's, what the hell, I don't know anything about it. But it's a dross off of lead.
Hmm.
It's poison.
You want to describe that thing that held the wagon wheels again? You know, in the summertime?
Well, it consisted of a big casting. And there was teeth in the bottom and teeth below, like on a file, on a cushion, see? And when you drop the lever down, it squeezed them on top of that. And then you pulled that lever that pushed that arm and pushed it together. See?
Yeah.
It upset. It pushed that iron, the hot iron. You hit that tire hot. And it pushed it together. You had to straighten it out when you come back on the anvil, because it did sometimes kick it. It didn't look right. complicated.